Chops TV.
You will be chopped.
Know what that means? Licking my chops.
Today I will show you how to do a karate chop.
Simply saying, no, he doesn't have the chops to do what it takes.
New thing. I'm busting chops.
Welcome to Chops TV, featuring Jennifer Lopez. Now here's Chops.
Jen, Chops, Kit the dog, Kit's busy bone, all in one room, all back here for Chops TV. And it's funny that Kit has a busy bone, and hopefully you can't hear her chewing too much, but it's the only way to quiet her down. We record this podcast from our house because we live together, because we're married. A lot of people who are married live together, so that's what we do. And we've been busy watching a lot of things. So this episode is going to be a little bit different, not quite as pointed and specific on things, just kind of going over a big long list of things that we have recently partook in watching on our Chops TV.
Yeah, we're going to run a train on all the things that we've watched recently.
That too is one way to say it. So I'm not going to, if that's the way you wish to express your artistic intent, Jen, I'm going to allow it.
I don't know how else you would say that. I think that's the only way to say it.
You think the only way to say that I've watched a lot of things is to say we ran a train on a bunch of movies on our TV?
Kinda. That's what we did.
All right. If anybody else has a more creative way, or shall I say dirtier way?
Dirty?
Oh, was there something? Mean? What? To say I watched a bunch of stuff on TV? Let us know. You can hit us up on Twitter at @_ChopsTV. Also, check out our TikTok. I've been experimenting doing normal TikToks that aren't just clips from the podcast. So that's the same handle at @_ChopsTV. And you might get some extra content if you want to hear more of my thoughts on movies, because they definitely don't get enough of them out here in a 50-minute podcast that we do weekly. First thing to update for us. We are trying to watch all 10 Best Picture nominees, something we did last year. And both years, I think we hit about half. Just naturally,
yeah,
through the year.
Throughout the course of the year,
because we know the movies that have buzz and we're interested in seeing them. And we basically had that this year, so we've had to catch up a little bit. But we are now through 7 of 10. The only ones remaining are American Fiction, The Zone of Interest, and Poor Things. We will have an episode later where we rank our top 10 and tell you who we think is going to win Best Picture. Tell you who should have won Best Picture. The Iron Claw, which was not nominated, but I would totally watch that again. And that'll be a later episode. But I wanted to keep everybody up to date on that.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. You got to get off the Iron Claw hill, though. I told you as soon as we saw it that it wasn't going to get nominated. There's just no way.
It Iron Clawed right into my frontal lobe, and I'm going to continue to push for the movie. It didn't get nominated for anything.
Are you sure? Now, this is not to take away from the Iron Claw, but are you sure this is not just like a symptom of your fever for Zac Efron?
I do not think it is a symptom for my fever. Your words.
It's a very good movie. It's a great movie, even.
It is already better than probably 2, maybe 3 of the movies we've seen out of the 7. You're right. It probably doesn't need Best Picture, but it should have been nominated. Yep. Based on what else is nominated.
No, agreed. Agreed.
Now, here's something that's a little bit more fun, kind of, because I do enjoy a lot of the movies we've watched. There's some that have not been my cup of tea. There's one that I absolutely hate that I've talked about before in the Best Pictures. This is also a group of 10 movies, and we've been trying to get through it, and we're halfway done, but we've ran into a snag, because Fast and Furious 6, the most sanely named of all of them, besides maybe the Fast and the Furious, but that was a pretty weird thing to name a movie about racing in the first. Like, I get it. I understand. Cars go fast. These people are angry criminals. Sure, you drive angry. Drive Angry, that's another movie. But either way, Fast and Furious 6, 7, and 8 currently are not available on any of the streaming services that we pay for. And so we're in this conundrum of, do we buy these ones? Because 9 and X, I guess it's X. It's 10.
But it's X.
Just sounds weird to say just X. Mm. Those are available right now. So we are in a little bit of an impasse there. But we have watched the first 5 Fast and the Furious movies. I had seen a few of the earlier ones. You've probably seen more of them than me. But you're not completely watched through. You've probably missed the last 2 or 3,
yeah.
I would assume.
Yeah, for sure.
I like the earlier ones more.
They're so good.
Yeah, we just got into Fast 5, which is the first one where it like kind of goes off the rails. But the earlier ones, like the action and the cars, it's plausible enough. that I can be like, okay, this is kind of fun, and I could see how this could happen on a real street, these people racing around. And then Fast Five hits, and remember when they were cutting out the side of a train and then pulling cars out of the train on some sort of hydraulic lift they smuggled onto? Because how did you get the car to go directly sideways? Then tilting it up on a flatbed truck and releasing them into the desert, in which nobody noticed until there was an explosion back there. That was, okay, I'm like, okay, so now we have jumped into that. But yes, you like the earlier ones too.
Yeah, here's my take. We come from a big, like, drive car family, which is a weird way to say, like, my dad is really into cars. So, like, we watched all these movies, like, when they first came out. Like, we saw them in the theater. My dad bought, like, the steering wheel for the game. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Like, did he have the pedals too?
Yeah, he had the pedals. And then I think there was like a clutch accessory that you could get too. But like, we would spend like hours in the basement, like just playing that game all weekend, right? So when Tokyo Drift came out, it was life changing for us. So I hold Tokyo Drift in a higher regard than most people do. Looking back on it, I'm right. I don't know what people are missing when they're watching Tokyo Drift. It's so fun and campy, but still like scaled down enough into like the real. Yeah, the realism of it still allows it to like make sense in our world and like things that are possible. Now there's obviously like the like drifting down the hill foreplay that
they are car dancing, Jen.
They're car dancing. So the car dancing is a little strange, but like the soundtrack hits. There is not a song on that soundtrack that misses. The Tokyo Drift theme song.
Some would say it puts you to sleep.
Yes. Yes. And I know I've talked about this before, but I'm going to talk about it again. My little brother would not fall asleep unless we put that song on loop. So, like, I know every single chord of that song because as soon as it stopped, shrieking from the upstairs, and we'd have to run and put it back on loop. So, like, it, Tokyo Drift holds a really, really special place in my heart.
Through five, and that, I think, catches me up to on any of the ones I had really seen. I do not think I've seen clips, of course, and, you know, I understand, you know, especially, like, Paul Walker died, and they do the send-off with him, and that's coming in the seventh movie, I think. Maybe the eighth. It's one of those two. But now I'm like through ones that I really have seen. I had seen the Fast and the Furious. I'm pretty sure I had seen Too Fast, Too Furious. At the very least, we owned the DVD. When you used to buy the used DVDs from like Blockbuster because they'd be cheaper, we definitely owned it because I remember the cover of it. And then Tokyo Drift was probably the one I'd seen the most. But I do not feel that this is a wrong opinion. And I can hear your arguments for the Fast and the Furious, the first one. That one's pretty good. And it's coherent. Tokyo Drift is the best of the first five. I think so.
Wow, that almost brought a tear to my eye when you said that. Could not agree more. Could not agree more. The problem with the fourth one, or I'll say this, the problem with Tokyo Drift is that they were clearly trying to like resuscitate this before, you know, it careened off a cliff.
There's so, like a five-year gap between Fast and Furious, or Too Fast, Too Furious, and Tokyo Drift.
Yeah, so they were trying to like bring this thing back to life, and they clearly didn't know how to do it. And from the response from Tokyo Drift, they're like, no, if you're going to bring it back, why don't you bring back the original guys? So in four, they do that, but then you start to see like family and like more insane or convoluted plots for the movies because we can't watch the same movie with the same people five different times, but everyone wants that movie anyway. So,
well, and if you're going to make a sequel, you have to up the ante and you have to push the envelope and you have to have bigger set pieces. And so you go from it being a reveal in Too Fast, Too Furious that the races now require turns and they're not just drag races. That's what they do at the beginning of that movie, to by the seventh or eighth one, Vin Diesel is driving a sports car out of one. I think it's Vin Diesel. Again, I have not seen these ones fully through, but I'm pretty sure it's Dom is driving a sports car out of one skyscraper into another one. And not only does he attempt this, he succeeds in this. Like, it's wild. But I'm still here for it. I think they're fun movies. No, so I'm ready to finish the watch through. But
even like five, you can tell with five, though, that the budget gets a little bit higher.
The movie is 30 minutes longer. And from there on out, they're all 2 hours.
It's glossier. And why is that? The Rock.
Yes. The Rock definitely gets better at acting throughout this. I've seen other things he's in, but I've not seen all of it. He's not a good actor in Fast 5.
He's not.
Oh, I guess we're going to have to go get him, aren't we? That's every line from him. It's somehow monotone, but high energy.
Oh, yeah. Just calling people like candy bitches. Like,
and like it doesn't fit the scene. Like, there's other actors who are like acting, and The Rock is sort of just saying his lines in a Rock voice. No, actually, Shade, like I said, he got better. He's a better actor. He's not a great actor. He never has been. I don't think that's unfair to say. Rude.
It's like you've never seen The Scorpion King.
Oh, yes. His finest film.
Rude.
The finest film of the Mummy franchise.
Rude.
But no, he's not very good in Fast 5. But you're right. He came, and then that opened it up to the other world, because Paul Walker became too much of a criminal in the fourth one. They're like, okay, we can't keep doing he's undercover stories. Plus, it just wouldn't, people would figure it out eventually. And so they're like, well, we need, you know, the cops coming after him. Well, enter The Rock. And now it's not an undercover cop with a small group of people working. It's basically the entire, like an entire branch of the military is at his disposal to take down this group of criminals, which, to be fair, their crimes have also escalated to where might be the case.
Do you know who that is? They called in the top dog. That's the guy you call when you want to get things done. And like, don't ask questions. Just give me a break.
While we sound very critical right now, like I said, I am very excited to finish my Fast and Furious watch through and finally say that I watched all 10. And if I still feel like it after 10, I'll watch Hobbs and Shaw. But I'm not sold on that one being on the list as of yet.
No, I'm really not excited for this latter half. I truly am not.
Well, it's going to take twice as long, too. Like, the 5 was easy because, hey, 100-minute movie, we can knock that out on a Wednesday night.
Yeah, that's fair.
Now you're talking, possibly 150-minute movie. That's a very different ask on any given night. Something you are excited about, and we've been excited about the Sonic movies in general. It's really cool that Shadow's been revealed that he's coming out, but rumored to have possibly been his final role in Sonic 2, Jim Carrey is going to reprise his role as Robotnik. And I don't mean that as it was his final role in a Sonic series. There were people who were seriously contemplating whether or not Jim Carrey was done with acting and his final role would be Robotnik. I guess that's still a chance.
Still a chance.
Just be in Sonic 3.
It would be the most Jim Carrey thing ever to do. So I kind of like in that sense. This movie is probably going to be my favorite movie of 2024. And I don't say that lightly. I'm so excited for this movie. They just said that potentially who's going to be Shadow? The voice actor for Shadow?
I don't know.
Lost their collective minds. But super excited about it. I don't care if it's campy. I don't care if it's bad. I like to see little fake Sonic running around collecting rings. Hopefully he just throws them out. We don't really see him like going down fucking railings, just collecting them. That's fun. Why don't we get that?
It looks like there is not a for sure on who is going to be Shadow. There is speculation online. But I cannot find a straight answer. And then I looked it up, a bunch of like video games and cartoon voice actors. And I'm like, that's not right. But a post from December 14th, 2023 from Destructoid.com. But they're just speculating. So I'm like, hey, let's go ahead and speculate with you. A few names he threw out are Anthony Starr, Keanu Reeves, Kirk Thornton. And it looks like Pedro Pascal. I do not know who Kirk Thornton is. I know all those other names. But,
yeah, not sure.
Anthony Starr would be cool. That's Homelander. That would be an interesting turn for his voice acting. And he could definitely pull off that kind of cocky behavior that Shadow has.
He has such a distinct voice that it would be hard for me to take away like the...
Yeah, but Keanu Reeves would not work.
No, he's too chill
and too... Like, everybody loves Keanu Reeves. Shadow is supposed to, at the very least, be an anti-hero, which I guess John Wick is kind of an anti-hero, but...
And crazy hot.
Most people who saw the John Wick movie, I think, missed the memo on that. You're not really supposed to love this guy. But I guess since he's killing worse criminals, it's okay. But yeah, I'm excited for Sonic 3. I don't know. It's not going to be this great movie.
Stop saying that. It is.
The first two aren't great movies.
What are you talking about?
You would put Sonic 1 and 2 up against like Godfather Part 1 and Part 2?
Okay, they're different. They're different.
I know they're different. I guess that's what I mean is that it's not going to be a movie that's going to show up in the award circuit, but I do enjoy them. And that's fine.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I'm excited. James Marsden. I'll support him through anything.
Anything James Marsden does is better for having James Marsden. James Marsden, Justin Long, Timothy Oliphant, all people that fall into this category that just put them in your movie or TV show and it's going
to
be better.
Yeah, I'm curious to see who that is for other people. Like, if this person is in this movie, I'm sat. I'm watching it. Keira Knightley is one of those for me.
Keira Knightley!
Yep, that one.
So, okay, Keira Knightley does it for you. Oh, I like that. That's a good pick. I would say, like, Toni Collette is in that for me at this point. Like,
interesting.
If I'm reading a cast and I'm like, ooh, Toni Collette's in it. Like, that'll like, increase my percentage chance of watching it probably 10%. Just in that initial seeing a cast list.
Interesting.
Yeah. Also interesting, Kevin Hart maybe had that feeling for people 8 years ago or so. Because we watched Lift, his new Netflix movie, and it's terrible, too strong.
Terrible's
of a word.
Too strong.
It's watchable. It's not, I wasn't sitting there like, when is this over or anything. It's just, it's paint by the numbers, heist movie, but like also convoluted.
But also
that's
not
the problem.
Paint by the numbers.
You can either have it be super convoluted and like, what exactly is going on? Or you can make a movie that like, oh, it just makes sense. Ocean's 11, they're just robbing a casino. There are details to it, but like, I understand what it means to rob a casino and what they're going to get out of it. This one, it's hard to, in Lyft, it's hard to comprehend what the bad guy wants. It's hard to comprehend why they're trying to steal it. And like, because the thing the bad guy is trying to do is too convoluted. He's trying to pay a hacking group that can somehow hacking, because I didn't care about the details enough because I didn't like the movie. Somehow through hacking could flood a bunch of European countries, and then that would allow the bad guy to short the market, but he has to pay the hackers with 500 million, half a billion, in gold bars, and the gold bars have to be flown, and so they have to steal bars.
But
you can't,
never...
like, if you know about they're working with Interpol. If you know about the hackers and that whole plan, why do you have to heist the payment for the hackers? Why can't you just arrest those people?
The thing that doesn't make the thing that makes the least sense is how they flood the cities. So they do Venice, mm-hmm. I think.
They
right?
start in they Venice. Start I can't in remember. Venice, they show
but
one.
They don't flood Venice, which is a very floodable city. Then they go to like a different place and then it's, I don't know. That shit doesn't make any sense. When I saw the movie, like, well, while we were watching it, it was funny that you had just started your fast kick because I was like, oh, Kevin Hart wanted to be in a Fast and Furious movie and no one let him.
That's exactly what I thought watching this, that like he's such good friends with The Rock, is jealous that The Rock gets to be in all these Fast and Furious movies, and eventually got to the point where he's just like, fuck it, I'll just make my own, and this one's gonna have boats and planes. Well, Fast and Furious beat all those things anyways, but yeah, it's oddly contingent upon boats and planes in this one, because they start in Venice and boats are a big mm-hmm. part of how they're pulling off this heist. We got to get to that first heist right after this point. And then it's all about planes and stealing planes. And it's apparently a slight adaptation of the Saints Row video game, which is kind of a Grand Theft Auto type game. I never really played Saints Row. I think it's a little more cartoony, which is pretty crazy to say because Grand Theft Auto is not exactly photorealism, but it's just a little bit more out there. And you can kind of get that from these characters. Yeah. Like Vincent D'Onofrio playing a master of disguise. Like, it's all a joke. He's clearly not actually
become another person. Become another person.
When he walks in as one of his disguises and they all go, Oliver, we love you, Oliver. I was like, I thought he was just dressed really poorly. And I was like, this is his character? What is this? And why are they all so excited to see him? And it's like, okay, it's because it's this thing. But that was a feeling the movie had because it's adapted from something, and I think they just kind of took a lot of the characters and put them in this movie, that it's not quite popular enough of a video game, and it's definitely not like a ubiquitous pop culture knowledge type thing. They were treating it like it was a sequel almost from the beginning.
Mm.
And that just kind of falls flat because I don't care about what's going on between the characters because I don't know the characters.
We disagree on this point. I don't think they
You
were...
need to have a get the gang together scene in a heist movie.
You
it's the best part of the heist movie.
You
second best part
you
after
don't
heist.
Need the You don't need that scene if you immediately do. After the intro, you're introducing all the characters and like what their thing is. I enjoy the flip on it and like having the heist happen first and then getting to know the crew, because then the heist is a little bit of a mystery too, like, oh, what's this person doing. The problem was the heist didn't really make any sense for 2024, so that was my biggest problem with that intro scene.
Yeah, I think they had an issue too with like the things they went through to do the heist, okay, fine. Some of it's technology that's probably not realistic at all, but okay, suspension of disbelief. I can do that. I think they really struggled writing this movie with what could be the hindrances to them completing their heist. Because during the whole planning stage, each person like had an individual time to talk to Kevin Hart as the team lead and be like, hey, it's not going to work, or I'm going to need this, or what do you think about this problem? And in that same conversation, it wasn't like, ah, we'll just deal with that if we have to later. And then like it comes up later. Like in all of, like there were like three of these back to back to back. Kevin Hart just goes, well, I think you're going to need this, or I think you should do this, just in the conversation.
I have like a plan for that.
Yeah. And it's like, so what was the point of introducing this conflict into the movie?
Mm-hmm.
Like some of them need to be nested and then can come up. And then during the heist, like they kept talking about it out loud on the plane, even though they knew that some of the people on the plane were involved. Henchmen of the bad guy. And they're just talking like, they're not whispering. They're not doing anything covert. They're just talking about it. And the only real conflict on the plane, like to make sure their plan can work or whatever, is she drops the transmitter thing in the bathroom and then they have to pretend that they're joining the Mile High Club, which that was at least somewhat funny, like a little moment.
Yeah, that was
movie.
A good part.
But then they get that done and then,
well, the guy, remember, the guy ends up not getting on his flight.
Yeah,
but
that actually turns out to be part of it.
Part of it.
Sorry if we ruined Lyft for you. And I understand that the whole time they're getting into fights and they're running away from the henchmen, but for the most part it just works. And like, I don't know, I didn't think they put enough obstacles in the heist that it just eventually ended up being them versus the bad guys anyways.
I thought that they put enough obstacles in it. I just thought it was stupid, to be honest. I just didn't think it was very interesting.
So real quick, back to that initial heist, the one they start the whole movie off with. They steal a Van Gogh so they can sell it for $20 million. So they can turn that $20 million around immediately and buy an NFT, which they bought and then acted like there was a security issue with everything, so they could steal the NFT artist and his NFT would go up in price because he's just been kidnapped. So then they could use the $20 million they sold the Van Gogh for to buy his NFT and then sell his NFT for like three times as much as that. And one, like, don't compare NFTs to Van Goghs as like as if you just sold a Van Gogh for a third what you sold an NFT for. I don't care if the artist went missing. Van Gogh's missing. So is his ear. He's been dead for years. His art is, physical art is definitely worth way more. Also, this movie was greenlit in 2021 and they apparently just didn't want to revisit the script. Maybe they had already filmed so much of it and they just had to do it and it got pushed in the release schedule because of the strikes. I haven't looked into it that much, but I know that it was thought of in 2021. Okay, NFTs, that makes sense for that time frame. But here in 2024, they're not important things, and that heist, luckily it wasn't the central one of the movie, mm-hmm. but it made even less sense.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is like Kevin Hart. It was probably attached to Kevin Hart and that's what got it off the ground.
And F. Gary Gray, the director. You know, he did Friday, yeah. The Italian Job, so that puts him in this realm, Straight out of Compton. And then he also directed one of the Furiouses, Fate of the Furious, maybe?
So my point is that Kevin Hart probably controls like a lot of what his image looks like and like what he's like projected onto. And they weren't going to be bad heist people. They were going to be heist people with a heart of gold, just like trying to protect the value of like real art and artists and stuff.
It's really weird for a guy whose career started with Friday to his last three movies being The Fate of the Furious, Men in Black International, and Lyft. With the exception of The Fate of the Furious, which those movies, which we were just talking about, are at least successful commercially. Those are very different than what he started. I mean, this is somebody who, obviously, like I mentioned, made Straight Outta Compton. He made Law Abiding Citizen. This is not, he has completely shifted what type of movie he's making. And I don't know.
No,
it's
for
just
sure.
A little weird.
It also rubs me the wrong way. Like, the movie is supposed to be sort of lighthearted, but it's not really a comedy. And he doesn't, and you can have like dramedies where, you know, the comedian brings that levity to it. But that's not what Kevin Hart did. He went in it doing, or hoping, I think, to do drama.
Yes, he's definitely trying his hardest to not do his funny man shtick, besides ones that are just like purposefully supposed to be funny. But I think that just loses a lot of the charm of a Kevin Hart performance.
And that's exactly what was missing from this movie.
Because he's not Brad Pitt, who can, you know, like, he's kind of half funny, half serious in the Ocean's 11 movie. I just keep thinking of that because it's such a better heist movie. And he kind of toes that line pretty well. Very charismatic. He's fucking Brad Pitt. Kevin Hart is charismatic, but it requires his humor. That's his superpower. Yes. That's his talent.
Yeah, and it doesn't have, like the gravitas or whatever that word is.
Gravitas.
You know, he doesn't hold that weight in when he's doing the more dramatic acting. So it doesn't really, it falls flat. It just feels flat. Yeah. The whole movie felt flat.
So because we had watched Lift on Saturday, we were just hanging out. No football this weekend. What should we watch? So I was just going to throw a movie randomly on. Initially, I was going to throw on Pitch Perfect. But then I saw The Wedding Ringer and I was like, I remember kind of liking that movie. It's Kevin Hart and Josh Gad, and Josh Gad's character, it's similar to I Love You Man, but instead of finding a best friend to become his best man, he pays a guy to become his best man, and then he has no friends until they have to pay a whole group of guys. Hilarity ensues. You could see The Wedding Ringer maybe would now make it on my movies about weddings, because I enjoyed it a lot.
It's so much funnier than you remember. I think so too. I think it just ages very well too.
I think it does a good job of just setting out all these characters. See, in The Wedding Ringer, you get a getting the gang together scene, and it's a better movie. I rest my case.
Yeah, but the gang isn't doing a wedding before the groom's wedding is happening. So you need the get-together thing, because we don't know any of these people.
How fake would a name have to be, or how obvious would it be that the person is coming up with the name by looking at objects in the room they are currently in for you to immediately clock that, like, that's not a real name?
It would,
like,
take me a while, I think.
Like, what if I went, oh, that's Plant Mirror. I gotta find a first name in here. I was gonna
say something like first name in here. Like, Claire is an author on one of the shelves, and Colgate.
Claire Colgate?
But you need a brand as a thing, because Bic is a...
They're both brands. Yeah.
Let's see what else is in here. We've got Paper Mate Pen. So Mate Colgate.
Mate Colgate?
That's a pretty good one.
How about Ranker Focusrite?
I'd believe that, maybe.
You would believe that one? Okay.
I don't know. So I'm notoriously gullible.
I have never called anybody out on it. And I don't know if it's ever happened to me in real life. And I think we just gave pretty good evidence that it's really hard. Just make up a name. It's easier to make up a name than to try to say the words of things around you and make them sound like a name. I do not understand how this became a cliche.
Also, how the guy... I think it just is also an example of how he's a bad liar, and he's bad at, you know, faking this, like, life, this fun life that he has.
Yeah.
Because he can't lie to the wife. He just, like, fills in the blanks and, like, lets her... She comes up with the idea from nowhere, like everyone does, if you're trying to fill in the blanks and, like, act like you were listening to someone talking. She just, like, says that he's a priest, also that he was in the military. And he's like, yeah, what's his name again? Bick Mitchum. Like, he lets her fill in the blanks.
And then just says yes to
and
all
says
of them,
yes.
Which it would be really
instead
easy.
Instead of lying.
Yeah, to also just say, no, that was my other friend from college.
Yeah.
He is, and give him a simple lie.
Yes.
Because instead, when Bick Mitchum does meet her, he has to wear army fatigue pants and a priest top with the little collar and stuff.
Yeah. But then every time he then is forced to lie, something ensues where
he has to do something or prove that he is
in it. Yeah.
Which culminates with them not actually getting married because he officiates the wedding and isn't a priest. So it doesn't actually count.
But it's okay, though, because I did forget that she was kind of using him the whole time. Kaylee Cuoco.
Yeah. They do a really good job of making sure that you know the dad is a jerk. But hers is a little more nuanced and gets, like, progressively worse. Because there is a point, like, halfway through the movie, I'm like, I feel like he's not supposed to be right for this girl, But I don't know if they've set it up enough. But by the end, they fill up that meter enough.
And Josh Gad is so funny. He really needs to stop doing...
The lime and the coconut.
He really needs to stop doing Disney stuff. Because he's a very funny... He's a very funny, like, raunchy actor, comedian.
A movie that was surprisingly raunchy. After we just spent, I don't know, 10 minutes talking about a comedy from 2015 that everybody forgets about. But we enjoyed. This one we also enjoyed. But it was a Friday night and... We may have had a few drinks and maybe weren't, you know, being as critical as we normally are. But I gotta tell you, it doesn't make any sense that Snoop Dogg decided to make a Mighty Ducks but make it football, Bad News Bears but make it football, and also make it rated R so it's not for children in any way at all. And for me, the movie kind of worked. It's called Underdogs.
I was gonna say the name of the movie.
It's on Amazon Prime and it's stupid and dumb. And I enjoyed my 90 minutes with it.
Yeah. What was the movie that you said? Bad News Bears?
Bad News Bears, yeah.
That's exactly what this movie is giving. Just like
Billy Bob like Thornton being kids being crass and stuff.
Yeah, or like, you know, the degenerate head coach like finds a new purpose with the team.
But that one's for PG-13, so with parental supervision, I think it's probably okay that like 10 and up see that movie, and that makes sense because those are the kids going through youth sports, so they know what this is kind of like. To start a movie that is children playing football with the disclaimer, we'll just have to bleep all of this. The following movie is rated R for strong language that may not be suitable for children. Okay, pretty normal start to a disclaimer. But fuck all that. You know as well as I do that the kids who aren't supposed to be watching this shit curse more than the rest of us motherfuckers. So stop worrying, kick back, relax, and enjoy the motherfucking show. Which I guess I can hear Snoop Dogg saying that. It's just really weird to click on it because a lot of people are not going to look into it enough. No. So this is our, I guess it's a spoiler warning, for people out there who are thinking, oh, I could show this to my kids. Snoop Dogg, that's funny. He hangs out with Martha Stewart. No, it is very much an inappropriate Snoop Doggy Dog type movie rather than a... What, does he still go by Snoop Lion ever?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's just called Underdogs.
No, that's the D-O-double-G for sure. And alternatively, watch it with your kids.
And see what they have to say?
Who am I to tell you how to parent? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't really have much more to say because it like the other movies I described, it is like that. Why it's like the Mighty Ducks is because he gets in trouble and has to do community service. And that's how he ends up coaching the team in Mighty Ducks. Gordon Bombay gets a DUI. Great kids movie, Disney. And he has to coach a team unwillingly, but learns from both the kids and himself. And the kids learn from him. And so there's all those lessons and stuff. But it's not what the movie's about. I guess it goes back to, if you enjoy little kids saying dirty words, then you're going to like this movie. And Mike Epps is funny throughout.
It reminds me of an era of movies gone by. Like the Beauty Shop, the vibe of that movie. It feels like that. And I miss those kinds of comedies. You know what I mean?
Not really. Those are not movies. I don't know. Beauty Shop? You think I haven't seen Barbershop.
Like Beauty Shop.
I feel like I'm being really called out here in a very specific way. So no, I don't know what to do in the situation. No.
Like Beauty Shop. Also, maybe it's just Queen Latifah. God, what is the movie with Queen Latifah where she is the convict who ends up being the nanny at the house? Man of the House, but it also is sort of like that vibe a little bit.
Bringing down the house. Steve Martin?
Yes, because there are children in there, but obviously like inappropriate hijinks happen involving the children and stuff. But people don't make movies like that anymore because it's like the line is very thin.
Yeah, but I do think that there is something from this like Underdogs movie because it does feel like Snoop Dogg is like, can I just mention all my famous friends? Because he tries to mention them throughout. There's lots of cameos in it as well. Let more famous people who have a vision for a comedy, whatever it is, let them make it. I want to see what they come up with because the studios aren't making comedies anywhere. I still have an appetite for comedy. So if Snoop Dogg or if Eminem... Or if Travis Kelce comes up to somebody and says, hey, I have an idea for a movie. I say green light it because you green light all the other crap that you throw on your streamer. So this was infinitely more enjoyable than the Lord of the Rings show for Prime in my book.
Let me rephrase my former opinion. I think this movie falls into a category of like cult comedies, like things that would come out and not a lot of people watch it, but the people who love it love that shit. Sort of like the Smoke High one. Which one is that one?
Like Cheech and Chong type stuff?
No, the one with Dave Chappelle where he
Half Baked.
Yeah,
I do like that movie.
Except, like cult classic comedies.
Because it's not good. Like by like
because they're not great movies.
Like if you lay out Half Baked like in a screenwriter like form, like critiquing it, it doesn't work. It's not it's not paced right. At the end, all of a sudden, boom! It's just all happening. And Dave Chappelle has actually told this story once that. Or no, it was the other guy. The guy who used to work with Chappelle. Nate, what's his name?
Oh, I know who you're talking about. The guy with the glasses.
Yeah, he told in one of his stand-up specials and was like, Dave called me one day and was like, we have to write a movie. Whoever it is. Miramax is expecting us to come up with a movie. So they like wrote it in a weekend and then made it. And that's why Half-Baked is, I mean, it's a perfect title because it's really a Half-Baked movie. But I do enjoy it.
Yeah, that's me too. That's a good point.
You know what else I enjoy? SpongeBob SquarePants, and I'm very excited. We're going to talk a little bit about our Super Bowl plans here because we started the football season with how are we going to watch football throughout the year, and we hit our mixture. Friend's house, our own house, fun casual joint, even funner, even more casual joint with your friends that things get a little too out of hand, so we only did that a couple of times this year. But how are we going to watch the Super Bowl? Well, I know that I'm going to, maybe I'll have to second screen it so that we don't miss anything on the actual CBS broadcast. But I want to see SpongeBob perform Sweet Victory. And I'm assuming it's going to be a new animation of it, though. They're not just going to take the old one from the Bubble Bowl and put it on. Which now that I say that makes me nervous that it's going to be like 2D. But I still want to hear SpongeBob perform Sweet Victory.
Anyone who was in elementary school in the early 2000s has been waiting for this moment since that episode came out. It is, even in the upper echelon of SpongeBob episodes, that one is at the top of the heap. Like, nobody dislikes Sweet Victory.
Good job by CBS, too, for, like, sometimes listen to the meme, because people will be excited about it. It's all about what effort do I have to put in to satisfy the thing that we're all joking about online being real? Because a mistake on it was, remember when Morbius got a re-release into theaters just like a month after it was out? Because everybody pretended like they loved Morbius so much and they were literally just trolling with Sony Pictures / Marvel. Yeah. And nobody went and saw it the second time it went out. And it's like, see, you guys weren't in on the joke. Sweet Victory is, you know, what, 3 minutes long? Like, people can be in on that, and it'll do great on social media and everything. So, like, this is a good instance of big company saw something that's popular online. They probably don't even understand exactly why people joke about it so much and love it so much, but they've just said, let's just give it to them.
Because
they
are clamoring
for it every year.
But why isn't it on the main broadcast? Like, why are they doing...
Well, because they are doing the Nickelodeon-specific airing of the Super Bowl.
And I know that. But put it on the main broadcast. What are you losing? 3 minutes?
Simulcast SpongeBob. Is SpongeBob more famous than Usher?
Probably.
I think so. SpongeBob definitely passed the grandma test a lot more than Usher would.
Because of the merch.
Have I ever
because
explained all the grown-ups,
yeah. Yeah. Because
for our listeners out there.
Because you use it against me all the time.
It's if you ask your grandma if she knows something or something, and she does... Then it's very popular.
Even vaguely works too. Like
yes, then it's a very popular thing. It is past the grandma threshold.
The yellow square that lives under the ocean. Yes, grandma, that's SpongeBob. That counts.
Speaking of Usher, you specifically wanted to give some halftime predictions. All right. Besides,
okay, hold on.
Hey,
no, wait. I have
what
to
Usher songs am I going to hear?
I have to get this out before we get into this.
Okay.
The lack of Usher being played on the radio leading up to the Super Bowl halftime show is alarming.
It's all Taylor's fault.
I've heard like 3 Rihanna songs this week in the car, like driving to and from work. I haven't heard a single goddamn Usher song. What are we doing here, people?
I want to rephrase that. It's not Taylor's fault because it's not her fault that she's dating somebody who happens to be playing in the football game and people are enamored with her as the most famous woman in the world. But I would think it's the explanation. Is that like she has taken all the music buzz from the Super Bowl.
She really has, honestly, because...
There is no excitement for this Usher performance.
No, because I even on just like scrolling Twitter, I'm seeing like less engagement about Usher being the headliner versus like, oh, do you think Taylor's gonna do a song, or, you know, what's Taylor gonna do? So I think you are right. However, and this is gonna be controversial, Usher doing a halftime show, 10 times better than Taylor Swift doing a halftime show. And you know why? Because Taylor Swift, even though she's great, she's a great performer, obviously, she just had the biggest selling tour of all time.
And then put it into theaters in which it was filmed and was still very exciting for people.
But she's just like a step above as far as like performance goes, like the Bruce Springsteen. You know what I mean? Like, great guy with the guitar, really captivating, does a really good show, but is it a spectacle? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if she can produce the 13 and a half minute spectacle that we need from the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and she does write like a lot of like ballads that are very long and a little bit more subdued. And obviously she has her like straight poppy hits, but I have not seen the Eras Tour movie, but the like little snippets they show does look like it's a very large performance, and it is in a stadium. But I do agree with you with the basic premise of hip hop type stars, pop stars too, have a better shot of like creating a set piece and like performing around, and now they're over here and big groups of dancers come out. Because we had this problem in the mid-2000s when they booked like the Rolling Stones and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. It's just watching a band perform on TV, which if you like the band, great, but it's not a spectacle to watch. When Katy Perry comes out on a giant lion and is walking it through the stadium, that's something to look at that now, I'm not normally going to see, and is worthy of the Super Bowl halftime performance.
Right. And I'm not even saying that you need to be at that level, right? Those are every 5 years performances, like Lady Gaga.
Flew in from the roof.
You just jumped off the goddamn roof. Katy Perry coming out on the lion. Even Jennifer Lopez and Shakira last time. Like, that is a whole thing. Going up and down the stripper pole. Incredible. Incredible, incredible, incredible. What I'm saying is, Usher is like a Bruno Mars in this sense, where like the hits hit. He is an incredible dancer. He's a very great performer. He's probably going to have like one or two, you know, special guest appearances.
Cool, because he has those people in his song, so it makes sense.
Because he has the robust catalog. Really is going to be
robust catalog is where I'm like, I know I've heard these songs, but Usher is not an artist that like, lives also, in my brain.
It's also the Super Bowl fucking halftime show. Okay, I want to hear, you know, Caught Up. I want to hear Love in This Club. You know what I mean? Like, it is a party. You know, I don't know if I'm feeling 22 hits the same during the Super Bowl halftime performance as like.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair.
Oh my God. He's going to do, he can do so much. He's absolutely, at least the beginning part of Confessions. He should start with Confessions. He should start with Confessions, and then the mirror crashes like in the video. Oh my God, I'm a genius.
I am a fan of the spectacle, which is why I had the unpopular opinion after it was, who was it? It was Dr. Dre and 50 Cent showed up. Eminem was there. Snoop Dogg was there, right? Yeah, that one a few years ago. And I get it, everybody. You love their music. It's from when you were younger. And it is really good music. But except for, was it Kendrick Lamar who came out and had all the people on the field? And like, that was okay, that's something that you can do because of what the whole football field allows you to do from a performance standpoint, especially when it's also on television. So it's not really even for the people in the stadium. Yeah. So you can do a lot. Theirs was mostly just standing on top of those like boxes.
And there was like different rooms in the house, and it fit the vibe differently. There were too many headliners. You can't have 15 headliners for one show. Like, you have to have Dr. Dre be the headliner, and then all the rest of the people be surprises. Because like, we knew that all these people were going to be performing together, so you're already expecting a lot versus getting the surprise and being like, oh, that was sick, they were there. It felt, you know. That's a great point that you make. I think the people love the music and the music is great, but it's a kind of fucking boring, honestly.
Yeah, there needs to be a big spectacle. 100 million people Kendrick are watching. Lamar, you can't get them with just liking the music, because there's no way 100 million people are, plus, you know, it's even more than that, are going to all like the same music. And so you can at least give them something visually, and that's going to hit a lot more people, because most people can be awestruck in a moment.
A performance with a vision. That's all I'm asking for. Give me some vision. Rihanna was pregnant, had to change the show a lot. I think to a lot of people, they were a little bit underwhelmed because they were expecting a lot. But we still had those floating things in the sky, and even like the camera work with the runway. And I mean, the choreography is incredible. Like, Usher is going to have a great show.
The Weeknd has a vision. You may not like it. I know you're not a huge fan of him. Well, and you did not like his performance.
I did not like his performance, and I also don't really like his music, so there you go.
When was the last time you watched the Shakira Jennifer Lopez halftime show?
3 weeks ago.
The month after that Super Bowl a few years ago, you watched it at least once a day for, like a month.
Oh, starting Thursday, I'm going to be rewatching Super Bowl halftime performances. Like, it's my fucking job. Probably during my job.
Besides that one, do you have a favorite from all those years?
Besides the Jennifer Lopez Shakira one?
Mm-hmm.
That changed lives?
I'll go first because I've got a few in my head there. It stinks because the bands I listed aren't good for the Super Bowl halftime performance, but that is, like, I like classic rock. So I was excited initially when they announced that the Rolling Stones were going to be it. But it stands out in a lot of people's minds. But this one's just dumb luck, and I'm not sure... He's so talented that it probably would work, but he's one of the ones that, like, it's just going to mostly be a guy performing his music. But Prince performed Purple Rain in the rain.
Prince is the exception and not the rule. So, yes. Like, anything that
you're not
I just,
Prince.
And everything that I just said does not apply to Prince.
Nothing. No rules applied to Prince. No. Not in life, not in death. Prince is perfect.
Yeah. No, for sure.
He's at least a perfect musician.
He's probably, like, the patron saint of the Super Bowl halftime show.
Yeah. Did you know that it used to be like marching bands and whatever little perform? Like, they didn't take it seriously for a long time. And then Michael Jackson did it. I believe that's the story. Either Michael Jackson was the first one when they decided to up it, or Michael Jackson did it and they're like, oh, we can never go back.
Okay.
Now, so it's something like that.
Okay. So I just went back to 2001.
Okay.
Out of all of these, it's not even that I hate to say it. I genuinely think Katy Perry's Super Bowl halftime show is probably top three of all time. Like,
it definitely stays in my mind. It was the first one I brought up.
She has like the spectacle element, but also what makes a great show during the half, because everyone is watching it at the same time, a great opportunity for meme culture, right? She had so many pieces of that immediately went viral.
Yeah.
Opportunities
Left
like
Shark.
That.
I forgot Left about Shark. Left Shark. That was a big deal for a while.
Oh my God, Left Shark was.
And she leaned into
and
it too.
Leaned
she
into
didn't
the
try.
Camp. Yeah.
She didn't try to like say this whole thing about Left Shark or like throw that guy under the bus or say something happened or this was actually meant to be this and something was malfunctioning. Whether or not those were true or they would have been excuses, I don't really care. That's what a lot of artists do. Because remember when somebody screenshotted one shot of Beyonce making a goofy face, and she like went scorched earth to get it off the internet?
Yes.
No, that is not the way you respond to being memed. That's only going to make things worse because no matter how much you are worth, you can't erase the internet.
Yeah.
I can find that picture in 5 seconds if I want to. And she went through so much effort to try to get rid of it, which made people want to make fun of it even more.
Yeah. The only reason why I don't put Beyonce up there is probably because she already has so many like big performances, like Coachella is probably like my favorite stuff that she's done in the last like 10 years. So the Super Bowl, while it's great, literally knocked the power out.
That's true.
But, you know, I think Shakira, I mean, I think Katy Perry is probably the best out of at least the last 20 years, which is crazy. Besides Prince, obviously, he's probably number one. Katy Perry, number two. Although it was a very controversial, fantastic halftime show performance. The Justin Timberlake, Janet Jackson, Diddy was there, Nelly was there. That was a great one.
No, that the Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake one was good, but obviously it gets overshadowed a
Not
little bit
good.
By its, controversy.
Not good. Justin Timberlake's. Why?
He did it a second time. I don't even remember that one.
Yeah, that's why. I mean, it was really bad. He did it when his newer album came out. At the time, it was like Man of the Woods, which... That was a really bad album. And then it's like aesthetically, it was weird. And then didn't even bring out NSYNC. So what the fuck is the point, right? Beyonce, you bring out Destiny's Child. That is the right thing to do.
Who was the one that was in Atlanta? And they got Big Boy, at least, to come out, I believe. But they did not get Andre 3000, which no shade to Big Boy.
With Maroon 5.
But Andre 3000. Yeah, it also didn't even make sense to do that. But I would rather see Andre 3000. That's just a personal preference, but at least they went out there. It's nice when they do like a city specific thing. Problem this year, it's in Las Vegas, and there's not really like a city specific thing. Every artist who's been around, every artist who gets to like Super Bowl level, probably half of them at some point have a residency in Vegas. Yeah, they're not from there.
That's a fair point.
So that's what we're going to watch at also, halftime, Vegas, what we're going to watch before the game.
Like Taylor Swift in Vegas? No. Maybe Taylor Swift in Nashville, but like Usher in Vegas, just like the vibe of Sin City and like
his. You don't go to Vegas and cry about your boyfriend who broke up with you.
No, you go to Vegas to get a lap dance from Usher and then your boyfriend breaks up with you.
All right. In between, we'll be watching a football game on that. How will we be watching? Because I said we'd tie it back in. This, the Super Bowl is a home watch for me because one, it's something that I have to watch closely for work. Two, work is the next day. I hate that the Super Bowl like just coincides with the work day. Some people have talked about, oh, can we move it and possibly get it to where it's a holiday on Monday, or can we move it to one of the holidays? Because there's a lot of little holidays in February that you could do with it. But we haven't done that. Home, post up in the living room, and here's our kicker, and I think a little secret power that we have. Mm. We order Chinese food. Because think about it. It's just a... Not just, but it's a lot of different fried varieties of foods that you can get. You can dip them. You can have a little bit. You can mix and match what you're going to have. You can get four different things. So it's not just, oh, I ordered a burrito bowl from Chipotle. And they're not as busy as the pizza and wing places throughout. And you can get your food hot and fresh right there. 6:30 kickoff. Boom. Crab Rangoon in my mouth. Sweet Victory playing in the background. Perfect situation.
Yeah, knock me out. I'm done. I was listening to Common Man and T-Bone on The Fan 3 to 6 p.m.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. It's called Synergy.
Oh, okay. I thought you were about to say, it's called Common Man and T-Bone. I was listening to these guys, Common Man and T-Bone. Their show is called Common Man and T-Bone.
On The Fan 3 to 6. Anyway, and they were talking about their lineup of food for the Super Bowl and like whose house would you go to. So T-Bone was talking about, you know, the traditional stuff, the wings, the thin crust pizza, then whatever. Man was like, well, I'm more of like a quesadilla, go more Tex-Mex with like the queso and blah, blah, blah. And then ice cream, I guess. It's fine. It's unoriginal.
I think they're also, and maybe it's because we're so into college football and we get so many of those tailgate party atmospheres throughout Saturdays, throughout the fall. But I think there's a little bit of a generational shift here because we are younger millennials, 93 and 94. That's right. You know, the cutoff is like 96 usually. Yeah. It'll vary from site to site, but it'll go as early as 1980, which means those people would have been 13 when I was born. I think younger millennials and Gen Z don't throw Super Bowl parties anymore. People always talk about Super Bowl parties and say, what Super Bowl party are you going to? What are you doing for the Super Bowl? I'm watching the Super Bowl at home. It's a Sunday night, and I'm just going to watch it. Like, I've never... So let's... Okay, I'm 30. So you could probably give me about 10 years of, like, adulthood. I've been to one specific Super Bowl party that, you know, people were drinking and partying mm-hmm. and hanging out like that. And it was my brother's friends who were actually throwing it, and I just went with my brother. And I can't think of... especially, and that was while I was still in college. Since college, I don't think I've ever been invited to a Super Bowl party. And that's not because I'm a loser and don't have any friends, because I've been invited to plenty of parties in that time.
Have you? Have you or have I been invited?
So let's they think invite about you it. And they go, you can bring that guy along.
Yeah, my plus one. Even in your friend group, you're my plus one. Isn't that cute?
All my friends give you a plus one so that I can come to the events.
Yeah.
Okay, back to my original point. You know what I mean about the Super Bowl parties? They don't exist.
No, I've been to two. And like you said, the last one I went to was in college when everyone had the, you know, you live in like the big mixed use building. So they have that common, that shared common area that someone always like rents out for the Super Bowl. So I've been to like a couple of those. But that, again, that wasn't since college. Also, I don't know what the vibe is now. Like, I just don't think that we can be bothered enough to go out to watch a Super Bowl if like the game's not compelling and it's not really about football anyway. You know what I mean?
You still have to get home on a Sunday and then you got to go to work the next day. Like, it's just so much easier to watch a Super Bowl at home. I think really as a demographic, we are out on the Super Bowl party. We may be wrong. Maybe people go to Super Bowl parties all the time, but I don't go to very many. But I'm out on them too in general.
But
like, if somebody invited me to one, it would feel like a chore.
I think so. We are so chronically online that most of the enjoyment from the Super Bowl is now online, like on your Twitter feed or whatever, like people talking about it in real time on the internet. So like, what's the point of going to somebody else's house when it's me and five other people and we're all on our phones anyway? Like, look at this funny tweet.
Well, and then like you said, with that, there's also like the mixed interest part of the Super Bowl, because there's no dead time because the commercials are now a big deal. The halftime show is a big deal. And then of course the game is a big deal. So how are you supposed to mingle, and what's the point of being there with 10, 15 other people, however many people are at your Super Bowl party? Because you're all locked in on watching it anyways. There's people shushing. Hey, you're shushing during the commercials, which I understand. I want to see the commercials too. But like, when I'm at somebody's house watching a football game and the commercial comes on, that's the time to talk.
Also, let's not show the best commercials a week before the broadcast.
Or it's somehow worse, the teasers for the commercials, because they don't give it away. But it's like, I don't want to know that. What was one I saw? Aubrey Plaza is going to be in like a Mountain Dew commercial or something. I don't need to know that beforehand. Just show it to me. And I'm going to watch the Super Bowl.
Hey, guess what? I'm not going to buy your piece of shit Mountain Dew anyway.
Are you going to buy, last thing we'll talk about, the new CBS show this spring, Tracker, starring Guy from This Is Us, which is what they're premiering right after the Super Bowl. The coveted slot of Super Bowl lead-in is getting the series premiere of a show called Tracker, starring the guy from This Is Us.
That's really bad.
I am not going to watch it.
I think this might... I don't know if it's a casualty of the strike, the writer's strike, or if they had this lined up. That'd be insane.
Yeah, I think it could be partially
that. That'd be an insane decision.
It's also, like, they only ordered a handful of pilots last year, and CBS reportedly ordered zero pilots for 2024. So there's still some like reality stuff that they're like dipping their toes in, as like far as like creating some new stuff that I saw, but they're not working on new shows.
Let's see. Super Bowl lead out. List of Super Bowl lead out programs. X-Files, Survivor, The Wonder Years, Undercover Boss, Family Guy, The Voice, Friends.
So you had to get pretty far down the list to get a show that you were like, what is that? I don't remember that, or I never watched that. Like, those first like five you listed were big name shows. And I know they've tried to do that, jumpstart a series by putting it on there. It's usually not the series premiere.
No, and this one, the Friends one, was literally called The One After the Super Bowl.
The Office one is Stress Relief. I'm 99% sure.
Really?
The Super Bowl ended, and then it was the fire. Stanley, get up. That whole scene. Yeah, like, that's perfect. That's exactly what you should hit. In Tracker, we're going to be meeting the main character.
That's insane. That's an insane decision.
Like, it's not even going to be a real episode. Like, a pilot is never really a real episode either. Like, maybe the second half can get into it. I'm assuming it's an hour-long drama. So, okay, the second half can kind of get into that, but you're going to have to spend a good chunk of the first half of, and that's the most important part because it's being led into by the Super Bowl, introducing an entirely new show to people.
It doesn't, and it would be one thing if it was like, I don't know, a show starring Brad Pitt or a show starring, I don't know, insert popular woman here.
Right.
It's the guy from This Is Us, which has only been in a couple more notable things, but It's just crazy to
Justin Hartley.
It's crazy to hard launch something like that. And like you said, that time slot, and no one's going to remember it in a year.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you might use this slot and you only get it every 3 years if you're CBS, you know, bounces around to Fox and NBC as well. Eventually, maybe even ESPN will get on that train. They love their Monday Night Football programming. But either way, right now it's three.
You know what? Sorry, go ahead.
I'm just saying, by the time they get the Super Bowl again, 2 years from now, actually, it'll be 3 years. It is a full 3 years because it's Super Bowl to Super Bowl to Super Bowl. Yeah. I don't think that show will be on the air.
No, I agree. I agree.
So, sorry, CBS. I think you're doing a bad idea here.
But
misusing an opportunity.
And I hope they prove me wrong. I hope it's like the breakout hit of the season. You know, it's not gonna be.
Oh, yeah. Hour-long network dramas. The breakout hits of all the recent seasons, right? Everybody loves those now.
Nothing on streaming.
No, definitely not. All right, so that was our hodgepodge show. I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
Did I enjoy it? I think I did.
Yeah, I think you did.
I think I did.
Will you enjoy the rest of the evening with me?
Not if we watch Fast 7.
Well, we're on number 6, so yeah, you would have no idea what's going on in Fast 7 if we just started Fast 7.
No, I think, well, I think I'll enjoy it. Some... What else? Sorry, before we end. I finished Percy Jackson. It was only 8 episodes. It was pretty good. If anyone wants to talk about it, talk to me.
I watched X on Sunday night, and I did like it. I have not seen, what is it? It's Pearl is the first one, and then Maxine is supposed to come out soon and complete the trilogy. Mia Goth is in it, who's become kind of this, like, not mainstream, full-on, like, horror scream queen, but that's definitely her realm.
She's definitely in that realm.
Yes. I do think there was a little bit, and again, I've not seen Pearl, so maybe it ties in a lot better and feels a little more, but I did like it. But I was just like, this is, I feel like I'm watching Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Like, it's just an homage to those horrors from the 70s. And it's like, kids, if you like this, it was good, but there are better horror movies out there that look like this, and they're really like this. This is not set dressing that you just kind of went somewhere and filmed Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So if you liked X, go watch that movie instead.
Yeah, in the 70s, they actually killed the actors on set because they couldn't afford
practical
effects. No. It's practical effects is when you kill the people for real. That's why it looks so good.
Well, I can't wait to spend the rest of the evening with you. And thanks for spending some of your time with us, everybody. We'll be back next week. Chops TV.
Chops TV is made possible by people who subscribe to podcasts and viewers like you.